Okay, we're starting here on the top of Samach Alvin with Aleph. We're continuing to discuss the sugya, the memra that Rav Idi brought in the name of Rabbi Shul ben Levi, that there's a difference between whether your tchum encompasses the entire city, where the city would only be counted towards Dalet Amot, versus if your tchum ends in the middle of a city, where you have to count the exact amount that you have, and wherever it ends in the city, that's where it ends. So that was a statement that Rabbi Idi brought in the name of Rabbi Shul ben Levi. Rabbi Idi on that statement said, Ein elu ela divrei neviut. And you could read that as both being positive and negative. Rashi and Tosafot take a stand that this is a positive statement over here. Tosafot, even though he brings examples from other places where it sounds like it has some negative connotations in it, especially considering the statement afterwards of Amarova, who's trying to bring some sort of proof to it. And Tosafot says, we do find places where we say Tananinhu is not a question to come and undermine or to change, but rather as a siyah, as a proof or a help to his position. So over here we have Rabbi Idi saying that Ein Elu Elu Divrei Neviut, in a positive sense that this is a Mesorah that he must have had, because we don't have any other source for this in the Mishnayot. Not that he's coming to say, I don't have any understanding of why he would make such a distinction. And along comes Rava and says, we have such a distinction found in the Mishnah. He brings the Mishnah that we'll get to. But rather, Rabbi Idi is saying, I don't know of any source for this, so it must be Divrei Misorah. And along comes Rava and says, no, not necessarily. We have it in the Mishnayot. So it could be that it's based out of the Mishnayot that we have, not necessarily a Misorah. But not that Rava is coming along to prove that that distinction exists. It could be that Rava is making a statement here of, why do you need this at all? Why do you need the Divrei Rabbi Shul ben Levi? We could have gotten it from the Mishnayot. So Tosafot brings both approaches. One approach where Rava is saying it is sourced in the Mishnayot, so don't say it's Divrei Neviut, but he's doing that lisiato to support the position of Rabbi Shul ben Levi. Or, as Tosafot says, based on the end of this Gemara, it sounds more like Rava is coming to say, why do we need Rabbi Shul ben Levi at all? It's already mentioned in the Mishnayot, and then the Gemara in the end will give its trichalei. There's a reason why we need Rabbi Shul ben Levi, because we couldn't have derived all of this from the Mishnayot. He brings the Mishnah that we'll get to, which is Ir Gdola and Ir Ktana. Why is there a difference between whether you settled in a big city or a small city? And there, the Mishnah says in a big city, you can walk the entire small city, but the small city can't walk the entirety of the big city. So the Gemara says the difference must be, one of them, the Tchum encompasses the other city. The Ir Gdola, its Tchum encompasses the entire Ir Ktana. And therefore, they get the Ir Ktana Kedalat Amot. On the other hand, the Ir Ktana's tchum ends in the middle of the Ir Gdola. That's why they cannot traverse the entire Ir Gdola. And that would be a proof to Rabbi Shua ben Levi's position here, that we find such a distinction in the Mishnayot. Then we had Rabbi Idi, or the Gemara says, what would Rabbi Idi say to that fact? The answer is that he has a different girsa in the Mishnah. The way we have the Mishnah is Anshe Ir Gdola Mehalchim Et Kol Ir Ktana Ve'ein Anshe Ir Ktana Mehalchim Et Ir Gdola. There's a difference between the Ir Gdola and the Ir Ktana. On the other hand, Rabbi Idi's Girsa in that Mishnah is both Anshe Ir Gdola Mehalchim Et Kol Ir Ktana Ve'Anshe Ir Ktana Mehalchim Et Kol Ir Gdola. It says Anshe in both, and they're both permitted. What's the situation is when you place your Eruv in the other city. If you place your Eruv in the Ktana, you have a din like the Ktana. Place your Eruv in the Gdola, you have a din like you are in the Ir HaGdola. So that was Rabbi Idi's response, and if that's the case, he doesn't have the distinction that Rava is showing from that Mishnah as a support for Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's position. The Gemara says, Rabbi Idi, Anche Anche Tani, Umukim Labinotein. He sets up those Mishnayot where you place the Eruv there. Aval Modeid Lotnan. The measurement, if you're walking 2,000 Amot, that will have no impact over here, because that's not what the Mishnah is talking about. Vilo, do we not have this mentioned in another Mishnah? V'atnan. Ulumodeid shamro, notnim lo apay mama, shachidu sof midato kala bimara. If his 2,000 amot end in the middle of a cave, that's it. He gets the 2,000 amot. He can't continue onward. He can't say that, oh, now I'm in the cave, I get the entire cave. Wherever the 2,000 amot terminates, that's it. That is exactly what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying, which is that the termination of the tchum is where it ends, if it doesn't incorporate the whole city. Gemara says, so fa'ir, it's trichalei, delotzdan. Yeshua ben Levi brings two statements. One statement is that if your tchum ends in the middle of the city, then that's where it ends, and you get no more. The other statement is that if your tchum extends through the entire city, to the other end of the city, then that city is counted as dalet amot. The only thing that you have in the Mishnah is one of those two factors. The one factor is if it terminates in the middle, you don't get the whole city. That you get from the Aram. But as far as if your tchum extends beyond the city, that is counted as da'ar amot, that's not mentioned in the Mishnah. And that's why you sof ha'ir itzrichaleid lotzdan. The fact that your tchum would reach the end of the city, that is not mentioned in the Mishnah. And according to Rabbi Yidi, that's why Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi has to bring that statement in order to teach us those dinim. So that's why his statement is a misora or a divrei niviut, because he's telling us things that we don't know otherwise, things that we wouldn't have found in the Mishnayot. So one piece of it we would find in the Mishnayot according to Ravidi, the other piece is not found there. Whereas according to Rabba, both pieces are found in the Mishnah because of the girsa that he has in the Mishnah. Amar of Nachman. Mandatani anshe lo mishtabe. Mandatame ein anshe lo mishtabish. So both girsaot are correct. Whether you say anshe yirktana machlimet goy gdola, or you say ve'ein anshe yirktana machlimet goy gdola, both of those girsaot are proper. Mandatani anshe lo mishtabish temukim la benotein. If you say that it says anshe in both cases, that it's true both for the yirktola and the yirktana, then you'll set it up as notain, in a case where you place your eruv in the other city. And when you place your eruv in the other city, you become like a member of the other city. Uman detani ein anshe, the one who says that the anshe yiraktana cannot work with the yiragdola, lo mishtabesh, they're also not problematic. The mukin la b'modeid, they'll set it up in modeid, which is the case that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is talking about, where you're measuring your 2,000 amot out of the city, and the question whether it incorporates the other city or not. V'chasurei mechsera, and it's missing words. V'achiktani. Anshe yirgdola melchim et kol yirgtana. V'ein anshe yirgtana melchim et kol yirgdola. The people in the larger city can walk the entirety of the smaller city, whereas the people in the smaller city cannot walk the entirety of the bigger city. Bamed varim amurim. That's the qualification of that. Bimodeid. That's the case where he's mentioning it. Aval mishaya b'yirgdola, v'eniach et iruvo b'yirgtana. If he was in the big city and he places iruv in the yirgtana, or if he was in a small city, he becomes like a member of the city, and he can walk the entirety of the city, plus 2,000 amot outwards. So we're able to explain the Mishnah, whether the girsa is anshe anshe, or whether this girsa is anshe ein anshe. One is talking about placement of the Eruv itself. Placing the Eruv itself, whichever city you place the Eruv into, you become like a member of that city. You can walk the entirety of that city plus 2,000 amot. In a case of anshe ein anshe, that's speaking about where you're outside the city. Whether you're in the Yir Gdola, and then your 2,000 amot incorporates the Yir Ktana, that'll be counted as Dalet amot. Whereas if you're in the Yir Ktana and your 2,000 amot terminate in the middle of the Yir Gdola, that's all you get. You will not be able to walk the entirety of the Yir Gdola. Amar of Yosef. Amar Ami Bar Abba Amar of Huna. Ir Shioshevet Asvat HaNachal. You have a city that sits right on the bank of the river. Im Yesh Lifana Daka Arba'a Modedim La Mismat HaNachal. If it has some sort of barrier, wall, along the bank of the river, that is 4 tfachim high, then you measure the tchum of the city from the bank of the river. V'im lav, ein modinin la el mipetach beito. If it's not that way, then you count from the beginning of the house, from outside of your house. Rashi explains this. V'im lav, kevan de be'ita tashmishtayu. Since it's scary, difficult, dangerous to utilize the space up against the river, lo have yishuv kavua. It's not considered to be a permanent settlement. Vavalek yoshvei tzrifim. It's the equivalent of those people that lived in huts we discussed before. When they lived in these straw huts, they were not a permanent settlement because of the temporariness both of the huts and the people living in them. So we say you're not a city, and therefore you count your tchum from your house. That's your shvita, you count it from there. Once you become a city, then we count your tchum from outside the perimeter of the city, and you gain the whole city as if it doesn't exist, if it's dalet amot. And then you walk 2,000 amot in every direction. So why over here is that not the case? Because of the nature of where they're putting their houses. They're putting their houses, number one, right on the bank of the river, and number two, in an area which the utilization isn't so clear it's going to be around, because the bank of the river floods, it overflows, and there is a chance that your house won't be here in a year's time. because it can be washed away by the water. Also, you're high up over the river, and there's a possibility that things could fall into the river, that it's a dangerous setup. It's a very, very temporary type of setup because there's danger, change, movement that takes place there because of where you're placing your house. It's a question of the permanence of the settlement here and the temporariness of the settlement. Over here, there's a fear that this settlement's not going to remain here because of where it's placed. But if you have a wall, that's what Rav Yosef is quoting, that if you have a wall on the bank of the river, that would prevent the water from overflowing and washing away this area. Or from the people on the inside, they won't be scared to go by the bank of the river because there is a wall there, then it does become a permanent settlement. It has to do with the nature of the setup. So he says, if you have a wall that protects the bank of the river from overflowing and washing away the houses, it makes it safer to use the bank of the river. So in those situations, we're considered to be permanent, and they will become like a city. Once they're a city, then you gain the whole area around them. If it's in a precarious situation to set up, then you're basically house by house, because we're not even certain that there's going to be a city here in some time. So Amarle Abaye, Daka Arba Amot Amarlan. So in the statement of Yosef, when he's quoting Rami Barava and Amar Rav Huna, he quotes it as Arba'a, which is four tefachim. On the other hand, his student Abaye says to Rav Yosef, you told us Arba Amot, that this Daka has to be Arba Amot. Remember we bumped into the Daka yesterday, which is, that's the obstacle doorway that they place at the bottom of the staircase. Over here, this Daka is acting in the same way. It's acting as a barrier or a divider between the river and the houses. So at first, the Rav Yosef quotes it as Arba'a, which is four tefachim. Abaye says over here that it's four amot and not four tefachim. You quoted to us in the past that it was four amot. So Maishna, Mikol Dake, Da'almo, Da'arba'a. How come all other times that we mention Daka, we mean four tefachim? And all of a sudden over here, you need four amot. Over there, for instance, in yesterday's daf, when we're talking about the bottom of the sulam, we're talking about the ladder, there we're discussing a siman, a simple sign to indicate that they've mistalek, they've taken themselves out of utilizing the chatzer down below. There, we don't need anything significant, we just need something that indicates that people in the merpeset no longer intend to use the chatzer. They'll walk through it, but they're not going to utilize it anymore. So that four tefachim is sufficient in that case. Over here, we're talking about the fear of either going too close to the bank or the water overflowing from the river. We need something that works. We need a real significant wall that's going to change the dynamic here. So if the wall is 4 amot high, then you have a bank that's protected and the river is kept in place and upper bank you can use and utilize. So in that situation, we need something that is going to fit the problem. So here we're trying to solve a real issue. In the other situations, we're trying to create a halachic fiction, in a sense, to say, look, we're going to remove ourselves from the chatzer. How do we do that? So we just need some sort of a hekir, an indication that that's the case, versus here, where we're looking for a practical solution. I'm Rav Yosef, mina aminallah. Where can I prove to you that I'm right? The Tanya. Heter Rabbi, she'ei b'nei gader, yordim l'chamatan, ve'ein b'nei chamatan olim l'gader. So here is a case where you have two cities, Gader and Chamatan, who are on the slope of a hillside, a mountainside. Gader being on the upper part, and Chamatan being on the lower part. And Rabbi was matir, b'nei gader, to go down to Chamatan, but he didn't allow Chamatan to go up to Gader. My time, huh? Why not? La mishum dahani avud daka, v'ani lo avud daka. The difference between them being whether they had a wall around them or not. If they had a wall around them, they were considered to be a city. And if they had the wall around the city, they get 2,000 amot from the edge of the city, from the outer wall of the city. On the other hand, if they don't have a daka, then they're not qualified or classified as a city. And so since they're not classified as a city, their tchum begins from the house, not from the edge of the city. So that's why the B'nai Gader could go down to Chamatan, because they were considered to be a city. They had a wall around them, and they could go there 2,000 amot would meet the city, whereas people of Chamatan were considered to be individual houses, and since they were individual houses, then if they were more than 2,000 amot away at some point from their houses, obviously there were some houses that were within 2,000 amot, Nevertheless, the entirety of the city doesn't automatically able to go up because their 2,000 amot are going to end before encompassing the entire city of Gader, which is higher up on the mountain. So there might be some houses that can reach it, but for the people of Gader, anybody can go as long as the wall, end of the tail end of the wall, reaches within the 2,000 amot to incorporate Chamatan. They can walk that area because they benefit from that. Ki ata Rav Dimi Amar Tachrugei Mitachrugei Luhu B'nei Gader the B'nei Chamatan. The problem was that the B'nei Gader were killing the people in Chamatan. So Ma Hitir. So what does Hitir mean? Hitkin. They made a takana. Rabbi made a takana in order to protect the people of Chamatan that they shouldn't go into Gader. Because when they went into Gader, it was very dangerous for them. They end up getting killed. The people of Gader had angry temperaments, had a temper. They used to get angry. They used to kill the people of Chamatan. Maishna Shabbat. Why would they pick Shabbat then? The problem is a permanent problem. And why would you only pick Shabbat to make such a gzeira? Teshchicha ba shichrut. Because drunkenness was common on Shabbat. Very interesting socio understanding of what was happening in their day. But since it was a day of rest, people drank more. Since they drank more, it was more common that they were drunk on Shabbat. And when they're drunk, and you have people with tempers, and they kill people easily, then there's a high likelihood that they would execute on that on Shabbat. So Rabbi was metakein that the Bnei Chamatan shouldn't go up to Gader in order that they should stay alive. So ki azla dahatam name mitagrele duhu. Wait a minute, but you're allowing the Bnei Gader to go down to Chamatan. So when the Bnei Gader come down to Chamatan, they're just going to kill in Chamatan. So the Gemara answers, no. Kalba belomata shav shnin lo nabach. A dog without a city didn't bark for 7 years. That means when you're not at home, you don't do it. You're not as secure, you're not as confident. Just like the dog only barks when it has a certain amount of confidence that it feels at home. So too, the Bnei Gader, when they're within the confines of their own city or their own area, they're comfortable enough to kill. But if they go down into Chamatan, they feel out of place, and they don't have that type of hubris, that feeling that they can go ahead and kill within Chamatan. So Mar says, Hashtanami mitagdere Bnei Chamatan, the Bnei Gader. Well, the way you set it up now, why won't the Bnei Chamatan take revenge on the Bnei Gader? Because the Bnei Gader will come in as individuals into Chamatan, and the people of Chamatan will kill them. Where it says, Kulihai lokaifi lehu. They don't feel so safe or secure. They might feel okay to allow the Bnei Gader into their city, but not so confident that they'd be willing to kill the people of Bnei Gader, because they know that Gader is right nearby, and they'll come back and take care of the situation if something bad goes on. So they have a certain amount of fear from Gader, so the people of Chamatan will not act. The Bnei Gader, outside of their city, aren't as confident, so they won't act. It's only when a person from Chamatan goes to Gader that we have the problem. And for that reason, Rabbi was mitakein that the Bnei Chamatan should not go into Bnei Gader on Shabbat because of the problem of Shichrut. So that's the second solution we have to this problem. The first solution was Rav Yosef's solution explaining why there was a difference between Gader and Chamatan based on his understanding of Daka, of a wall. On the other hand, Rav Dimi's explanation that it had to do with the nature of the people in Gader and Chamatan, that the Bnei Gader were killing the people of Chamatan. And now we have the next answer, which is Rav Safra Amar Ir Hausia Ki Keshet Havai. It was a city that was made like a bow. The question is, which one is a bow? So the way Rashi reads it is that Bnei Gader were a regular city. Bnei Chamatan were shaped like a bow. But shaped like a bow, where the ends of the bow were more than 4,000 amot away from each other. We learned before that if the ends of the horseshoe are more than 4,000 amot away from each other, they are not considered to be one area. You do not count the yeter, the line between the end of the horseshoe, as the end of the city. They become separate entities because they're more than 4,000 amot away from each other. So because of that, the Bnei Gader can reach into the keshet, all the way to the keshet of the Bnei Chamatan. But that's what that has to do with the 2,000 amot away from here to the yeter. Everybody agrees about the 4,000 amot across. The disagreement was about whether the 2,000 amot from here to the yeter. That's where they argued. Tosafot brought what you said, which is, well, if you have less than 2,000 amot from here to the yeter, then between the sides can be more than 4,000 amot. So then it would be a machloket according to Tosafot. You're right, according to Tosafot. But the Gemara never states that explicitly. There's a machloket like that. The Gemara gives it as a given that more than 4,000 amot away is considered to be a separate area. But you're right, according to Tosafot, it'll be a problem. We're going to see that Tosafot sets up the Gemara differently. And that might be one of the contributing factors, is that fact. All right, so now, you have this keshet, this bow, this horseshoe, and the ends are more than 4,000 amot away. So B'nai Gader, they can utilize from the end of their city, they can move 2,000 amot, which includes the whole keshet. On the other hand, the problem for the people in the keshet is that their 2,000 amot doesn't reach Gader, and the ends of the horseshoe are at an angle, so they may be more than 2,000 amot away, and they don't get to you count from the end of the horseshoe, because they're too far away. And because of that, B'nai Gader were able to walk through Chamatan, but B'nai Chamatan were not able to walk through B'nai Gader. Tosafot actually learns the opposite way around. Tosafot says that the B'nai Gader were in a keshet, and the B'nai Chamatan were in a regular city. And the B'nai Gader, the keshet was within 4,000 amot. It was a keshet where they did get to the yeter because the two ends of the horseshoe were less than 4,000 amot away from each other. And therefore, the B'nai Chamatan could only reach a portion of Gader. Or, he even suggests they may not have been able to reach any of Gader, depending on how they're situated relative to the horseshoe. But because B'nai Gader got to count the string across the horseshoe, and count their 2,000 amot out from there, they're able to reach Chamatan. And that's why they can walk over Chamatan. On the other hand, the B'nai Chamatan can either only reach a portion of the horseshoe, or they may not be able to reach the horseshoe at all, depending on how they're situated on the angle towards the ends of the horseshoe. So whether they can corporate some of that or none of that will depend on how far away they are. Nevertheless, they are not able to go to the whole city of Gader. And that's the way Tosafot explains it. So again, the machlok between Rashi and Tosafot is which one of the cities was a keshet, and then based on that, what's the nature of this keshet? According to Tosafot, the keshet is Gader, and it's less than 4,000 amot away, so they get the benefit of the string across, and they count their 2,000 amot out from that string, whereas Chamatan only gets 2,000 amot from their city, and that will only incorporate portion of Gader or none of Gader at all. Whereas Rashi believes that Chamatan is the keshet, and that's why they couldn't go out, because they were more than 4,000 amot away, each of the ends, and they didn't get the benefit of the yeter, and their 2,000 amot only count from the ends of the horseshoe. Whereas Gader, as a city, can reach the other areas, because their placement allows the 2,000 amot to reach that area. So that's the third answer that we have here, which is Rav Safra's answer. Rav Dimi bar Chinan Amar, Anshei Yir Gdola, Vanshei Yir Ktana, Havai. This is a case of the big city, little city that we learned before, which is that the big city's tchum incorporates the entirety of the small city, and therefore they can walk that way, which is Gader can walk to Chamatan because their tchum overlaps the entirety of the city of Chamatan. On the other hand, the Yir Ktana, Chamatan, which is a small city, its 2,000 amot terminates in the middle of Gader. And so because of that, they cannot traverse the entire city of Gader. Rav Kahana Matni Hochi. That was the way Rav Kahana explained it. Rav Tiyumi Matni Hochi. Rav Safar Rav Dimi Bar Chinana. He just quotes it without attribution, which is, Chanamar Ira Suya Kekeshet Havai, Chanamar Anshe Yir Ktana, Anshe Gdola Havai. So you have Rav Kahana saying it with attribution to who specifically said it. And here, according to Rav Tavyumi, they both said it, we just don't know who to attribute it to. So he brings the same thing, just without attribution to who is the specific author of the Memra. Alright, now the next Mishnah. So here's the Mishnah that we've been quoting all along, which is, Anshe Yir Gdola, Melchin et Kol Yir Ktana, that the people in the big city can walk the entirety of the small city. And the people of the small city can walk the entirety of the large city. Just so you know, you can see here that on the side, the Rif and others have the girsa being Ein Anshe, which seems to be the girsa that was more common. Based on the Gemara that we saw before, it was Anshe Yir Gdola can walk Yir Ktana, the Ein Yir Ktana Yichola Aloch Yir Gdola. We know before that Rav Nachman said both girsa oath are proper. The question is which girsa was really found in the Mishnah. Over here we have it as Anshe Anshe. Possibility is that it's Anshe Ve'ein Anshe, and you see that in the Rif. Ketzad. So how does this work? Bisha Yabir Gdola Renatanet Eruvo Bir Ktana. Someone who was in the big city and put his Eruv into the little city. That's why, according to the one who said that it's talking about Tchum, that he has to say Chasuri Mechsura. Bamed Varim Mamurim, that's Bin Modeid. Bin Notain, what's the din? So this is the din for Notain. If you place your Eruv in the Yir Ktana, or the other way around, Bir Ktana, he lives in the Yir Ktana, Renatanet Eruv Bir Gdola, and he places Eruv into Yir Gdola. You become like a member of the city. The city now becomes like a dalet amot for you, and you can walk the entire city, and then 2,000 amot out of that city, because by putting your eruv in the city, you become like a member of the city. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Ein lo elo memakom eruvo alpayim mama. Akiva says, wherever your Eruv is, you get 2,000 amot. Amar lahem, Rabbi Akiva, iatem modim li benotein Eruvo b'me'ara, she'en lo'elo milkom Eruvo alpay mama. Don't you agree with me that if you put your Eruv into a cave, you only get from the Eruv 2,000 amot outwards? So we don't say that he gets the whole cave and then he counts the 2,000 amot out afterwards. He just gets from his Eruv. Why is that different than the city? Amru lo, they respond to him. Eimatai, when's that true? Bizman she'en ba diurim. That's because the cave was empty. It was absent of inhabitants. So there, the cave, when you put the Eruv down, all you get is where your Eruv is. Aval yesh ba diurim, if it had inhabitants in the cave, or like in the city where you have inhabitants, malechet kula b'chutz la'apayim ama. That would be true by the city, be true by the cave. You get the entirety of the space, and you only count your 2,000 amot from the end outward. Nimtza kal tocha mi'al gaba. Turns out that if you're in the cave, you end up having a kula that you don't have if you're on top. If you place your Eruv on top of the cave, you get 2,000 amot in every direction. That's it. If your Eruv's in the cave, then you get the whole span of the cave, and you only start counting your 2,000 amot from the outer ends of the cave. Ulamodei, chamro, notnim, alpay mama, shafilu sof minato, kala bimara. And this is what we quoted before as well, which is that even if you place your Eruv somewhere else, and your 2,000 amot end in the middle of the cave, that's the end. You don't get the whole cave. You stop, you terminate right then. That's what we quoted before as the support to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's position, that when your 2,000 amot end in the middle of the city, that's where it ends. You get no more than that. This is the end of the Mishnah that we quoted before. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shavat bi'ir chareva, if he put his Shvitah inside of a desolate city. Desolate city means that the wall of a city is still intact, but there's nobody inhabiting the city. L'Rabbanan, according to the Rabbanan, Me'alechet kula v'chutzala apay mama. He is Me'alechet kula v'chutzala apay mama. The Rabbanan in our Mishnah argue on Rabbi Akiva, when a case of it's a ir chareva, which Rashi defines as, there's nobody there, it's desolate, but Michitzotea kayamot savivla. The walls are still intact. So then you're allowed to walk the entirety of that area, v'chutzala apay mama. Niachet eruvo b'ir chareva, on the other hand, if you put your Eruv in that area, you only get 2,000 amot out of your area. So if you physically go to that area and make your Eruv by physically being there, Shavat, then that area becomes like Dalet Amot for you, because you have a walled-in area around you, it becomes like Dalet Amot, and you count the 2,000 amot from the edge of the walls outward. On the other hand, if you place your Eruv in that city, then you only get 2,000 amot. The city has no bearing on you because Ein la diurim, like the Rabbanan said in the Mishnah. There's nobody inhabiting the city, then you don't gain that benefit of being qualified as a city. That's the statement of Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel. But Belazar ibn Amora, who argues and says, Echad Shavat, Ve'echad Ein Yach Eruvo, doesn't make a difference. Ma'alechad Kula B'chutz Ola Apai Mama. No matter what, you're allowed to get 2,000 amot from the outer walls of the city. Meitevei, what about our Mishnah? Amar lehen Rabbi Akiva, ayi atem modim li benotein et eruvo b'me'ara, she'en lo mimakom eruvo elo alpay mama. Amru lo, the Chachamim responded in our Mishnah, imatai, man she'en ba diurim. Ha, ve'en ba diurim modulei. In the end, that's what the Rabbanan are basically saying in the Mishnah. If there are no inhabitants in the cave, we agree with you, Rabbi Akiva, that if you place the eruv there, all you'll get is 2,000 amot in each direction. So, if that's the case, how's that different than the case of Ir Chareva? How does Rabbi Elazar all of a sudden come along and say, oh, if you put your Eruv in this uninhabited city, you get the walls of the city and outward? That's not what the Chachamim said in the Mishnah. The Chachamim in the Mishnah say that if it was in a cave that's uninhabited, you're right, Rabbi Akiva. You only get 2,000 amot. But that's not what the city is. The city is inhabited, and that's why we disagree with you. So how's Rabbi Elazar making a statement otherwise? So Gemara says, Ma'in ba'diurim. You read Ein Ba Diurim improperly. It doesn't mean there are no inhabitants. Ein Aruya L'dira. Doesn't mean no inhabitants. It means that it's not proper for living in. One of the walls collapsed. It's no longer intact. So his idea of Diurim is not about inhabitants, but the determination is whether the wall's still intact. Is it still standing? And that's how Rabbi Elazar is going to read the Mishnah. Tashma. So let's look at this. Shavat Bi'ir. He put his Shvita down in a city. Afilihi G'dola Kantiyuchya. It's even as great as the city of Antioch, a large city, bi'amara, or in a cave. Afilu hi kimarat Tzidkiyahu Melech Yehuda, the cave of Tzidkiyahu Melech Yehuda, assuming that it was extremely large cave, and on top of that, the cave that they're speaking about here is based on when Tzidkiyahu tries to escape from Yerushalayim underground, and is caught by the Babylonians on the other end. They follow him out and they capture him when he tries to exit the cave on the other end. But assuming that it's a king's cave, this is a very large cave. So in this case, you can walk the entirety of the cave, the entire of the city, and outside of it, 2,000 amot. Tani ir dumir demara. There were two cases in this brayta that we just quoted. One was a city, and one was a cave. Ma me'ara chareva. Just like the me'ara is chareva, because we know this is from the time of Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, and either there's Einsham Du'urim because it belongs to the king. And since it belongs to the king, nobody else lives in the king's cave besides the king, and the king's not around. Or because it was destroyed. So if you're talking about the cave of Tzidkiyahu, we know that's uninhabited. So if that's the case that we're talking about there, that it's uninhabited, then we're comparing that to a city that is uninhabited as well. Af ir chareva. Vishavatin avayin yachlo. The Braita said, when does that work? Shavat. In a case where you actually physically stayed there. The Braita does not mention eniach, placing your eruv over there. So that's a proof to Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel against Rabbi Elazar. Again, we're seeing a distinction between Shabbat and Eniach in a case where it's Chareva, when it's uninhabited. Gemara says, Mani. Who is the author of this? Ilema Rabbi Akiva. If Rabbi Akiva is the author, Mayriya Chareva. Afilu Yeshiva Nami. If Rabbi Akiva is the author of this Braita, why does it have to be desolate? Even if it was settled, Rabbi Akiva says, when you put the Eruv down, you only get 2,000 amot in each direction. Elalav. Rabbonon. You see, it's authored by the Rabbanan, the time of the Shabbat in of Eniach Lo. Only because you actually physically were there, do you get the 2,000 amot out. But, if you placed it there, it wouldn't work. Again, that's a proof to Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, in the position of the Rabbanan, not like Rabbi Elazar. It says, Lo, Teima Ir Dumia de Ma'ara. You read it wrong. It's not a city similar to the cave, El Eima Ma'ara Dumia de Ir. It's the cave that's being compared to the city. Ma'ir yeshiva, af me'ara yeshiva. Just like a city is inhabited, so too, we're talking about a cave here that's inhabited. Ve Rabbi Akiva, and the author of that braita is Rabbi Akiva. Damar, ein lo mimakom eruvo la paimama. Doesn't matter whether it's an inhabited city or an uninhabited city. Rabbi Akiva says you get 2,000 amot in each direction from wherever you place your eruv, period. So he'll be the author of the Braita, and then it's not a proof against Rabbi Elazar's position, because we're not speaking about that case. We're speaking about Rabbi Akiva, we're not speaking about the Rabbonon. Shabbat Mudi, if he was physically there coming into Shabbat, then he would, Rabbi Akiva, agree that you get 2,000 amot from outside of the city, versus when it's Heniach. Va ki Marat Tzidkiyahu Kitani. Didn't it say that the cave was like Marat Tzidkiyahu? So if it's Marat Tzidkiyahu, it means it's destroyed or it's uninhabited. Like the reasons we said before, either because it's the king's cave, nobody else was there, or because it was destroyed. So why did it term it as Me'arat Tzidkiyahu if it's still inhabited, according to him? Ki'marat Tzidkiyahu v'lo ki'marat Tzidkiyahu. It's similar to the cave of Tzidkiyahu, but not exactly like it. Ki'marat Tzidkiyahu gidola. They were using Me'arat Tzidkiyahu just to teach it was a large cave. V'lo ki'marat Tzidkiyahu dilohatam chareva v'alcha yeshiva. But over there, it was desolate or destroyed, uninhabited, but over here, yeshiva, it's settled. So that's why they used Marat Tzidkiyahu, but the way we're explaining the Braita now, that Rabbi Akiva is the author of the Braita, that we're talking about even about an inhabited area. And the reason that it works is because you actually settled there. And that's why it works. Rabbi Akiva agrees in that case that you get 2,000 amot from the outside of the city or outside of the Me'ara. But if you placed it there, it would not work. The Rabbanon, that's a total different story. And therefore Rabbi Elazar can maintain his position. This Braita is not a question on him. Mar Yehuda, Ashkechinu lebnei mivrechata. So Mar Yehuda found the people of Mivrechata to come motvei eruvayu bebeik nishta debe agubor. They used to put their eruv inside the shul of Be Agubor. Now, Be Agubor was outside the city. Outside of the city, there was a shul. And they used to place their eruv inside of the shul. So they placed it in the shul, in the area in the shul closest to them. Mar Yehuda says, what are you doing? Why are you placing it in the area closest to you? You should place it at the furthest end of the shul. Because then you'll gain more space to the side, the other side, or the outside of the shul. That'll help you out. What is Mar Yehuda basically saying? He's saying that I am worried about Rabbi Akiva's position. Rabbi Akiva says when you put down a roof in the location, you only get from that a roof 2,000 amot. Doesn't matter that it's inside of a building, inside of an inhabited area. It doesn't do anything for you when you place the eruv in there. So Mar Yehuda is saying, I'm worried about Rabbi Akiva's position. Why are you putting it in the area that's closest to the city? You should put it at the farthest end of the shul. That way you gain more. Amar lehu gabu beit fe. Push it further into the shul. Keiched lishtar lechut fe. That way you'll do them out be more beneficial to you on the other side. Amar le Rava. Rava says palga. So palga here is used. Rashi says choleg al chachamim ata. That you disagree with the chachamim. In other places, Rashi says that kantar. This is a person that's ragil to get involved in machloket. He sticks his head in, gets into arguments all the time. But this is the way that Rava is referring to Mar Yehuda. Beirvin late techashlo the Rabbi Akiva. Nobody worries about Rabbi Akiva's position in Eruvin because it's a din derabanan, and we paskin divrei amekil beirvin. Rabbi Akiva is not the divrei amekil in our Mishnah. So why are you Mar Yehuda worrying about the position of Rabbi Akiva, given that we paskin like the amekil in these cases? So we don't have to worry about it. Once you place it into the shul, the whole shul is considered to be a singular area, and since the shul is a singular area, then it doesn't matter if you place it in the place closest to the city or the furthest from the city, you get 2,000 amot from beyond the shul. And so, Rabbi Mar Yehuda's suggestion that they move the area within the shul was not necessary. Okay, now we'll begin the Mishnah for the next parak, and then we'll do the Gemara tomorrow. Hadar im ha'akum b'chatzer, a person who lives with a non-Jew in his courtyard. Oh, im ish'enu im modeh be'eruv, or someone who does not admit or agree to the eruv, which the Rishonim call a kuti here, someone who's a kuti, who doesn't believe in the dictates of the Chachamim, or the Torah Shebe'al-Peh, so they don't modeh be'eruv, harizeh oser alav, it causes problems for him. He may not make an eruv, he cannot do anything to solve the problem. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov omer l'olam, einu oser, ad shehu shnei Yisraelim, osrim zeh al zeh. It's only true that the akum, or the kuti, seems to cause a problem when you have two Jews in the courtyard plus the other individual. Then they cause a problem. The Gemara will get to this, which is that that's the common occurrence. In general, the Jew would not live alone with the akum because of the fear of what he might do to him. We're afraid of how the akum might affect him. The Gemara says that they were shofech damim. These people were dangerous. And so you would not be willing to live alone with that person because of the danger of living with them. It's true that the kutim, we don't have that chashash by them. But once the chachamim made the gzeirah by the akum, they just paralleled it for the kuti. So even though a person might live alone with the kuti, you would not live alone with an akum. Therefore, they did not make their institution or make the problem when you live alone with the kuti because there are other mitigating factors why you wouldn't live alone with the akum. So because of that, they only made their institution the common occurrences where you have two Jews living with the akum. In that case, they feel safe. And so the chachamim wanted to dissuade you from doing that because of the influence of that situation. Therefore, they said, in that situation, you have a problem with the chatzer, making an eruv for the chatzer. And the only way for you to do it is to actually rent the space from the akum in order to take him out of the picture. But he can't become a part of the eruv, or you can't make an eruv without him. I'm Rabbi Gamliel. We had a case where there's a tztuki living with us in a mavui in this cul-de-sac in Yerushalayim. Our father said to us, "Maharu v'otziu et hakelim l'mavui." Make sure you run out to the mavui and utilize it. Ad shelo yotzi v'yaser lechem, before he takes his stuff out and causes a problem for you. Yehudomer b'lashon acher, Rabbi Yehuda quotes the whole memra differently. Maru v'asu tzarchechem b'mavoi, ad shelo yotzi v'yaser lechem. Go and do all your needs in the mavoi before he comes and makes it asur for you. The difference between the two lashonot being when you do this. The first lashon says that you should go out and utilize the area once kidei shayom. Once Shabbat has started, go out and make sure you utilize it, and to ensure that his bitul reshut that he did for you will not be reversed. Because once you utilize it, you take possession of the bitul reshut, and then he can't reverse it. So that's why he's saying to them in the first statement, make sure that you utilize it before he comes and reneges on his bitul reshut, this stuki. Or the second lashon is, go utilize it mi'od yom, because bitul doesn't help on Shabbat. So make sure you utilize it before Shabbat, in order that he cannot reverse himself on Shabbat. So that's the Mishnah. What's interesting in this Mishnah, and Tosafot takes up the issue right away, is that we have three types of people in this Mishnah. We have an akum, a kuti, and a tztuki. So now, what's the interplay between them? We know that an akum and a kuti are different. We already spoke about that, that the akum and the kuti have different chashashot in terms of whether they're rotschim or they're shofech damim. Nevertheless, we already put them together in a single bucket. The question is, what's the din of the tztuki? From Rabbi Gamliel, it's clear that this tztuki is enu gakum, does not have a din of an akum, because You're letting him be mevatel reshut, which is not permitted in the case of the akum and the kuti. By the akum and the kuti, we said that they ruin your eruv. They don't allow you to make an eruv. Bittul reshut does not work by them. The only way to get around that problem is to be socher, is to rent the property from them. Over here, Rabbi Gamliel is talking about a tzduki and saying that you can have bittul reshut in that case. So you see that Rabbi Gamliel clearly believes that the tzduki is enugakum. The question is, how does he view the kutim? The kutim have an interesting history within the Torah Baal Peh. During the time of the Mishnayot, there is a machloket as to whether the kutim are gerei arayot. They only converted because of fear of the lions. It's based on a story in Sefer Melachim. And therefore, they were not real converts, and they were never considered to be Jewish. There's other opinions in the Tanaim that say that they were gerei amet, that they were real converts, and therefore they were full-fledged Jews that went off the derech later on. And that would make a big difference in our case over here. If you think they're gerei arayot, then to place them together with the akum makes a lot of sense. If they're gerei amet, then they're much better to be placed with the tzdukim. The tzdukim are basically Jews who went off the path. And the kutim should have the same din. So based on this, Tosafot goes back and forth as to what is really the position of Rabbi Gamliel over here. Rabbi Gamliel splits between the kuti and the tzdukim seems to indicate that the tzduki is not like an akum, but the kuti is like an akum. If that's the case, he must think that kutim are gerei arayotin. But then he shows that that's not true. In other places, that Rabbi Gamliel believes that they are gerei amet. And so in the end, says that the truth is that the din that Rabbi Gamliel brings here by tzduki, he would apply to a kuti as well. So why didn't he mention kuti? If he already is saying about a tzduki, why does he mention kuti? Either because that was the story. The story was about a tzduki, so that's what he mentioned, and it didn't involve a kuti. Or the other answer is that after some time, the Chachamim investigated the kutim and found that they were worshipping an avodah zarah there, and they declared them as being non-Jews, the gamrei. So at today, there's no halachic nafkamina anymore, because today, kutim had the same din as an akum. So even according to those who originally thought they were gerei amet, at this point in time, that's just not meaningful anymore, because they are designated like an akum. So in Al-Khanami, Rabbi Gamliel himself might believe that the stuki and the kuti have the same din, but the ikar halacha, that's not going to have a nafkamina today. So that's number one. And then in the instance of the Tanakama, the question of whether a kuti and a tzduki have the same din is also questionable. Does he believe a kuti, yes, but tzduki, no? Because a kuti is gerei arayot, whereas the tzduki is considered to be a Jew that went off the derech. So would he agree with that distinction between a kuti and a tzduki, or would he say that kuti is equal to tzduki? And he just mentions kuti, but he means it's tzduki as well. So that's also the question here about whether you distinguish between tzduki and kuti. All right, stop over here.